Good morning and good evening again. Welcome to Awakened Talks. My name is Rohit and I will be your host for the day. Talks is a space where we hold conversations with individuals whose inner journey inspire us and whose outer work is also transforming our world in large and small ways. Awakened Talks is an all-volunteer offering of service space, a global community fully run by volunteers committed to changing yourself to change the world and to practice small acts of kindness in the world. Today, the theme we want to explore is leadership and love with three very special guests, Yogesh, Amrita, and Arun. And just to anchor ourselves in the present moment and to fully bring us ourselves in this space, I invite all of us to open our call with a minute of silence, and then we'll begin the rest of the call. Thank you. Thank you. Now I'd like to invite a dear friend, Aditi, to open the call with a small song offering. And Aditi is joining us from Pune, and she works in the IT, which is information technology sector. But her life and her work is also rooted in IT, which is inner transformation, which manifests in her life through stillness practices, her meditation practices, which she has been part of since she was a child, and also through service, which is small acts of kindness. And what is most remarkable about her is her enthusiasm to say yes to any small acts of kindness and service wherever she can come and connect and build bridges and spread a smile to few people around her. So welcome, Aditi, and please take it over.
Thank you, Rohit. Hello, everybody. Before I move on to this song, I would request everybody to please sit wherever you are with a supposition or with an intent that we are going to, through this song, spread a lot of smiles, a lot of love, and a lot of togetherness, you know, that this world needs, you know, in the form of this love and through this song today, here and now. किसी की मुस्कुराहटों पे हो निसार किसी का दर्द मिल सके तुले उधार किसी के वास्ते हो तेरे दिल में प्यार जीना इसी का नाम है किसी की मुस्कुराहटों पे हो निसार किसी का दर्द मिल सके तुले उधार किसी के वास्ते हो तेरे दिल में प्यार जीना इसी का नाम है माना अपनी जेब से फकीर है फिर भी यारो दिल के हम अमीर है माना अपनी जेब से फकीर है फिर भी यारो दिल के हम अमीर है मिटे जो प्यार के लिए वो जिंदगी जले बहार के लिए वो जिंदगी किसी को हो ना हो हमें तो एतबार जीना इसी का नाम है किसी की मुस्कुराहटों पे हो निसार किसी का दर्द मिल सके तो ले उधार किसी के वास्ते हो तेरे दिल में प्यार जीना इसी का नाम है जीना इसी का नाम है थैंक यू
Thank you, Aditi, for your remarkable voice and your remarkable spirit. And I think this song is a perfect way to open the topic for today, which is the question of leadership and the question of love. And you know, as I was thinking, one of the basic questions which came to my mind yesterday is that I started reflecting what is the role that leadership plays in our lives. And as leaders, what is the role that we play in the lives of people around us, whether it is our employees, our customers, our partners, the environment, or even the society at large, human beings at large. And right from the day we are born, we are part of organizations and systems, whether we perhaps we don't realize it from the beginning, but whether it is family, whether it is the schools we go to, whether it is the corporations we show up to work for, the NGOs, the government, all of these are organizations, which all of these are run and designed by leaders. And what goal these organizations work for? And also, as importantly, what is the process and means which they employ depends a lot on the culture which is established by the leaders, which perhaps at the very core depends upon the beliefs, the worldviews, the values, and at the fundamental level, who the leaders are. And I, as I zoom out a bit and look at the society today, today our world seems to be facing many old problems and new problems. On one hand, there are so many challenges at the macro level, like climate change, the inequality, this pandemic, which we have been into in the last 6 months, which has deeply exposed the interconnection of all our fates. At the group level also, as we engage in organizations, we are seeing that employee disengagement and group disengagement is like soaring high level globally. And even in personal life, as we go through this progress, what we are seeing is that for many of us, as we grow into material comforts, we often struggle with some of the subtler issues like of direction, of a sense of direction in issues like health, purpose, relationships, satisfaction, peace, and joy. So many new old problems are there. Many face of the new and new problems are emerging. And in some ways, the lives of leaders are also no different. So we have seen in the world around us today, we have seen what leadership for power looks like, what leadership for votes looks like, what leadership for profit looks like. And I would say that we have even seen what leadership for impact or leadership for purpose looks like. Something which is not often spoken or seen in action or explored. And that's the intent for this conversation, that what does leading with love look like? What are its properties and characteristics, and how it affects the various challenges and opportunities which we have at hand today at an individual, at a groups, and at a systems level. And we have three wonderful people to explore this topic today. Not only have they been a leader in their own lives, in their own remarkable external and internal journeys, but they have also supported many, many other people, big and small ways, in discovering more wholeness and wellness in their leadership, more love in their leadership. People we have today, Arun, and Arun is the founder of, he has been in this space for last 40 years, one of the pioneers in integrating leadership and spirituality. His work, a lot of his work has manifested through Pragati Leadership, an organization which he started. He also is actively involved in Pragati Foundation and a lot of other work. One of the things which personally recently stood out for me about Arun is he has done some incredible work in actually building peer-to-peer peace dialogues between people, between children, between India and in India and Pakistan, which I thought was a phenomenal initiative. And thank you, Arun, for joining us on this talk today. We also have Yogesh, who is one of the leading behavioral scientists in Asia. He was nominated among top 100 emerging leaders in Asia. He's the founder of Game Changers, and he has worked with tens of thousands of leaders and people across the world, across all the continents, in terms of finding the moviosity, the balance of inner and outer in their lives. And he is someone who is very moved by performing arts and also philanthropy, and is engaged in numerous big and small ways in various philanthropy projects. And last but not the least, we have Amrita, who is the founder of Back to Source Coaching, which is her attempt to integrate our timeless wisdom, which comes in our form of scriptures, into bring a bit more flavor of that in our corporate lives. She has been a former business leader as well, and which she stepped out of the after having a successful startup for daycare. She stepped out of that, and now this has been her offering to the world. And it is remarkable the way, in small ways, she brings the spirit of kindness and love in all her interactions, whether professional or personal. Before I hand it over to you, I also, just given that we have the creative license, I just want to show some visuals to just shine light on some of the lesser known aspects, which I think make all of you who you are and inspire so many like me. So I will just take a moment to pull up. So this is a photo I could lay my hands on. I don't know, this is a photo which I think describes Arun. I don't know if Arun is there in the photo or not, but that's pretty much part of the story, that how his leadership is not about himself. So here they are somewhere in Pune, installing a peace pole. And this is not long back. This is just a few days ago on the World Peace Day. And this is every single breath of ours is orchestrated by a deeper systemic intelligence. It was Arun says. Similarly, this is something which came up when Amrita and I spoke for the first time, and she said a beautiful incident that she said that my doors of my heart and my house are always open. So in Bombay, we know that she lives in an apartment, and there are, as we know, all know that there's a lot of support staff in any community. So she says, my doors are always open. And one of the biggest things which makes me proud is that the people like security guards have the confidence and the trust that they just show up at my house and say that I'm feeling very hungry. Can you give me a snack, or can you give me a drink to sip? I'm feeling very thirsty. So this is the spirit. Atithi Devo Bhava is something which is very overheard, and we all have learned since childhood in India. But this is something which she embodies and respects. And this is one of the older pictures which I found on the internet from Yogesh. And he says that how might we offer compassion from a space where we step across the identities of which is who is a giver, who is a receiver, and that kind of separation ceases to exist. So here he is, and with his group of volunteers in an orphanage somewhere in Delhi, bringing the cafe experience to all of them, not as an expression of giving them food, but as an expression of being together and sharing joy together, sharing the joy which is there in each other's hearts. So with that, I will stop talking and invite all of our speakers to share any opening reflections and the context, as we shared, that love is something, you know, I have been part of organizations on the business side as well as on the nonprofit side. But love is something which is not typically which you hear in the leadership meetings or in the strategy plannings of the organizations today, or even in families, I don't know. So when we talk about the words leadership and love together, what are some stories or some visuals or some thoughts or some experiences which it brings up for all of you? Maybe we can have Amrita first to share some opening reflections, and then Yogesh and Arun. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rohit. Thank you, everyone who's here on the call. And special thanks to Aditi. You sang the song of my heart. It's from my grandfather's film. And I open all my sessions that I do with this song. So I really feel that I'm at home. So thank you so much for bringing that to this session. And, you know, Rohit, the picture and the landscape that you painted of the world and its great need is very different from the world that I experience and create for myself. And I'd be happy to share some insights into that as we speak of leadership and love. So at this age and stage where I'm at in life today, I find that it serves me personally to look at everything that is offered to me in life from the space of how I see it as an individual and how I see it as part of a collective whole. And that's really how I witness everything that is offered to me. And so when I look at leadership and love, I really look at it at an individual level as how I am going to lead this ship of mine with love, the ship of this body, mind, intellect that I've been bestowed, and how am I going to lead that with love? And that for me is the space of self-love and acceptance, which has been a journey for me, and I have come and rested in the space of acceptance and self-love. And then when I look at it the other way around from a collective, I look at it as how can I lovingly lead the ship that I have, whether it's my family, whether it's my friends, whether it's the community I live in, the organizations I serve, and how can I bring that spirit of love to everything that I do and offer. So by profession, I'm a life and leadership coach. And I like to say it that way because people always ask me, so are you a life coach or are you a leadership coach? And I don't really see the difference between those two things, you know? And I cannot imagine a life where you're not a leader of your own life. And I can't imagine a leader who doesn't have a life. So I really don't see the difference between those two aspects at all. And I feel really fortunate and blessed to be in a space where I can exude this sense of love, or what I call as, you know, love with a capital L, no expectation, just an offering, just a flow of abundance. Through every conversation I have, whether it's through a conversation where I'm pitching for a new client, or whether I'm engaging in just a conversation with friends, or a conversation like this, or through one-on-one coaching, all the work I do, I hold really is an expression of love. And one of the things that I'm hugely committed to through the work that I do, which I call my life's work, is to raise this consciousness amongst humanity, one conversation at a time, and to bring the sense of spirituality back to the boardrooms. Because for me, spirituality is nothing other than an expression of pure love. There are many authors. I'm not a very avid reader, but I read a little bit. And there is one thing which stayed with me, which is of a person called Gary Zukav. It's part of my father's collections, and I found it in one of his books when I was visiting him in Pune. And really, he spoke about this aspect, which stayed with me, of in life, when you sit down, when you reflect, and you put down all the things, you know, there are some things which you actively engage with from a space of love. And there are some things that frighten you and that you're scared of. And there'll always be those two aspects of love and fear. And what I learned from him and what I bring to my life is that I choose love no matter what. And that's how I lead my life. That's how I engage with it. And in my work, I've found another phrase very recently, which describes the work we do, and which is called spiritual partnering. And I just love that. It's just such a beautiful way to express, what we offer and do. And it's the sense of this conscious path in which we relate with each other as individuals or as groups, where the common intention is to serve a higher purpose. And it's this recognition of this oneness, unequivocal oneness, is the space that we step into through the work that we do. One of my dreams really is to facilitate leadership work, this inward journey with music. And I know what the title track of that will be. That will be chukar mere man ko kiya tune kya ishara. Because that's all that I can really do, is I can only make space, connect from my heart to your heart, and just point you in that direction. And just allow that love to reveal yourself to yourself. That's really how I see my work as Back to Source. I'm walking that journey, and all of you are invited. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Amrita, for that opening reflections. May I invite Yogesh now?
Thank you, Rohit. Amrita, thank you. I'll take the liberty to complete the next two lines. Badla ye mausam, badla jag sara. That leaves me with 5 minutes of knowing what quite to say after that, because badla ye mausam, badla jag sara, and then what? That's it, right? But many, many moving pieces in what's already been said. You know, I saw Arun Bhai's photograph, and there was that systemic integration, which was the title there, you know, the peace pole that they planted. And what came alive for me was, you know, when we talk about love and leadership, and Amrita spoke about when people ask her, are you a love coach? Are you a life coach? Are you a leadership coach? She said, how can those two things be different? And really, I think in many ways, in my understanding and experience, leadership is about unlocking the spectrum between the binaries. And these binaries are not just in terms of decision making, that we, you know, the small and big decisions, the micro macro decisions that we make. The fact that the world that we live in, wittingly or unwittingly, is invested in always telling us that the vocabulary we can use is the vocabulary of or, this or that, this or a few soulful relationships, or I can have many shallow relationships. And well, that's a false, it's a tyranny, because it's a false choice there, right? And so leadership is about being able to see the entire rainbow, the entire spectrum, and seeing that there are so many, 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 many different ways of dancing. And really, you know, gently, and sometimes not so gently, interrogating how we define, it's a loaded word, success. Right? And so to me, from where I see this, as I've grown into, you know, it's sort of the work that we do with behavioral sciences and the work we do with leaders, it appears to me that in some ways, our definition of what constitutes success has narrowed and narrowed and narrowed and narrowed and narrowed, which, to use a metaphor, is like saying that there's only one way to sing. Right? And when you say that there's only one way to sing, is it possible that a lot of us believe that we cannot sing to begin with? And I think so that's the one of the sort of the central challenges insofar as leadership is concerned, which is, you know, being able to see the spectrum and unlock, just look at the many, many ways of dancing in that entire spectrum. So that's one. And I think the second bit about leadership, which is resonant, Rohit, is that how do I see uncertainty for what it is and invite the self and people around us to let go of the illusion of control? Right? Because, and it's, you know, I don't use those words lightly, because illusion is what it is. And I'm happy to kind of elucidate just very quickly. You know, if you go to Aboriginal cultures around the world, if you go to shamans around the world, if you go to unlettered people, native cultures anywhere, South America, Australia, New Zealand, Maoris in India, and if you have a conversation with them, in more or less ways, they would say that pehle hum paida hua, फिर हम स्कूल गए, फिर नौकरी लग गई, फिर शादी हो गया, फिर बच्चे हो गए. ओके, हाउएवर इफ यू गो टू अ पर्सन हु इज लिटरेट, हु इज एजुकेटेड, हु इज लेटर्ड, दे'ड से आई वाज बोर्न, आई वेंट टू स्कूल, आई वेंट टू कॉलेज, आई गॉट अ जॉब, आई मैरिड एंड देन आई हैड kids. And to me, in a sense, that is the divide. So, you know, education, the way we define it, gives us an illusion of control, whereas the other person is like, I am really, you know, I'm an allowance of what life has to offer to me. So I think being able to see that And okay, so you know, you spoke so much at the top of our call. You spoke about organizations and, you know, how all of us, in the many contexts we function, are organizations. Selling uncertainty as risk is a $6 trillion business every year. Right? The difference between risk and uncertainty being that when you're talking about risk, past behaviors can be used to model present choices and predict future results. That's what happens in a casino in Las Vegas, for example. That is risk. But the world that we live in is uncertain, which is to say that the number of factors at play itself cannot be accounted for, let alone designed for, let alone quarantined. Right? So I think, I'd leave leadership at those two things. You know, one is about unlocking the spectrum, and the second is about being an allowance of what is. And being able to see that, you know, what we're fundamentally, that the life that we're living in is uncertainty and, of course, complexity. About love, you know, my own experience has been the big battles in life for me have been battles for love. Okay, and as somebody who's, for better or for worse, spent an unhealthy amount of time in the last 15 years thinking about these things, it appears to me that when I say that the big battles are battles for love, it is mostly love from, you know, three kind of spaces. So one is, it is maybe love that was denied to me from some of the primary caregivers when I was growing up, and that is the kind of validation that I'm seeking, and, you know, I want to do things to be able to believe that I'll become worthy of love. Second, maybe love that I'm seeking, you know, in terms of intimate relationships, friendships. And then the third is the kind of love that I'm seeking from the community, which is what is roughly known as fame, right? And it appears that I want all of those kinds of love, because I'm hoping if my primary caregivers can love me, if my friends can love me, if my intimate partners can love me, if the community can love me, then I should certainly be worthy of love, of self-love. And to me, it seems like a goose chase. I mean, it's taken a few years and many false attempts. So the epiphany is that one can never do things for self-love. One can only ever do things from self-love. I feel complete in this moment. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Yogesh. Over to you, Arun.
Thank you very much, Rohit, and a very hearty good morning, good evening to all our viewers, and big, big thank you to you, to Aditi, Yogesh, Amrita, Nipun, and all the other volunteers who made this happen. Such a joy to be here. And I'm particularly happy that this is happening on Dashera, which is the Indian tradition of the choices between good and evil, between darkness and light, between fear and love. So I think humanity is at a crossroad right now, an immense crossroad. And we have all kinds of scenarios happening in the world. We have armed conflict, we have compassion at work, we have heroic acts and all kinds of things. And I was really inspired by what Amrita shared. You know, she said that the world that I choose is really my world. So it's not, there's no such thing as the world. within that the world, there are worlds which we create through our own individual thoughts, words, and actions. So if I choose to look at it in one way, I see fragmentation all around. I see fragmentation based on race, based on skin color, based on gender, nationality. I see conflicts, armed conflicts, religious strife, you know, huge challenges on orientations, my political orientation or sexual orientation or whatever. I can see a world of fragmentation and conflict. But if I shift my attention to the heroes like Yogesh and Amrita and Nipun and so many other wonderful people on the planet, I see a world of compassion. I see a world of kindness. I see a world of abundance and joy also. So friends, I think I'd like to emphasize that the world we are in is not a generic thing. It is a personal choice. So the world can be burning up, but you can still be in a cocoon or an island of humanity and love, as pretty much service space is. I mean, our experience in the leadership pod, a beautiful family of wholeness and joy. So that's one thing I'd like to share with you. Now, leadership is about creating new worlds. For me, leadership is about creating new worlds. And creating new worlds is about starting to think in new ways, because you create worlds through your thoughts. So if I choose thoughts of fragmentation, if I choose thoughts of love, that's what I'm going to manifest in the world. The world is simply a manifestation of our thoughts. So if leaders are people who create new futures, and if thoughts create futures, I think the task of all of us as leaders at the individual level and at the collective level is to choose love, is to choose love, to choose thoughts of joy, of peace, of abundance, of wholeness, and not get carried away by the fear and fragmentation that we see in the world. And Aditi's song, and of course Amrita's reinforcement of that, reminds me of a little acronym which I love, which is life is love in full expression. Make life love in full expression. Let every single moment be love in full expression. And I think that the key here is, once you start letting go of the small I and you drop the I trouble that comes from I, and you know, you drop that I trouble and you begin to see life in its beauty and wholeness, miraculous things happen on their own. In Pune, we have a whole lot of people working in the education sector, in the sectors of whole food, safe food for all. And if you ask me, Arun Bhai, did you do it? I said, no way. No way I did it. Hundreds of us are doing it together. There's so many people doing wonderful work, education today, society tomorrow, the other thing. So again, I want to emphasize, it is not as if the leader does anything. He or she creates a space and a field for the emergence of beautiful things to happen. And that happens best when we are anchored in love. It happens best when we are anchored in the peace of the heart. I just want to end with a little vision I have. The vision is thousands and thousands and millions of awakened youth anchored in love, murmurating like fireflies all over the planet, bringing in a new era of joy, peace, and abundance for all. This is my dream, and all are invited to be part of it, and we are already part of it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Arun. And as I hear all of you, one of the themes which sort of seems to be common in everything which all of you are sharing is that this notion of choice, that we have a choice to choose our stories, to choose, you know, how we see the world and how we engage with it. And, you know, coming someone from, you know, an Indian background, and I think it applies perhaps to the whole world also in two different degrees. And I also heard Yogesh speaking about it. So that when you grow up in a society where sort of the career paths and your life trajectory is almost set, that once you grow up, you have to go to a school. And there's very little time to slow down from the moment you're born, that you always have your to-do list and the next list there, that this is the next thing to be done. This is the next thing to be achieved. And in that, as we spoke, that love, experiencing, exploring yourself, figuring out what this life is, does not seem to be part of that list really as such. So whatever you're all saying, I think sounds great. Whenever, as I listen to it as a listener, it feels that that is the aspiration which I want to carry, that I know that the beauty of and magnanimity of what we are all speaking here, but how do we really build pathways to that, right? Like if I am in a business school, which I was, I don't think there is any room to explore love. If I am a CEO of a listed company and there's a next quarterly result coming up, I don't feel that there's a space in my life to work without agenda, without expectation. So, or I could be a leader of a nonprofit organization as well. So in that way, what would be really useful is that I think to hear a personal story from each of you, that what were your personal pathways to where you got to reflect on some of these things? What was a moment of shift in your lives? And then how we can create those pathways for each, all of us can create those pathways in our own lives also. Any of you who feels called to offer first?
Happy to share. And I hope we're not going to keep the same order as we go along, but I'll go with the second round in the same fashion. Just to put a little bit of context and linking it back to Aditi's song, is that I come from parenting of mixed parenting, Hindu and Muslim parenting. And as I grew up, this song of Kisi Ki Muskurat was a prayer that we used to sing every single day. That was our prayer. That's the first song that we learned. That's how my parents raised us. And I think through that whole process, there was a part of me that was seeking. I didn't know for what, but it was always seeking. And this song really gave me the essence of how I can live my life. When I was little, I didn't know it. I just sang it, but it somehow seeded that thought. And as I grew up and I, you know, went through the, like you spoke about, Rohit, traditional aspect of go to college, depending on your marks, choose science, arts, or commerce, not really thinking any decision from the head or the heart, just by what the circumstances were, and engaging with life, as I connect the dots backward, very mechanically. And even to the point, I would say, of, okay, now it's time to get married. Let me get married. And I just got lucky from a space of love, because my husband spoke of unconditional love from the first day. I had no idea what that was it, but I just got lucky, right? And so I was planted in a space of unconditional love. And then, okay, now married long enough, have children, did this, now do this, now do this. So it just went pretty much like that, I think, till I was 35. But I kept seeking, and I kept what I call spiritual shopping. And at some point I arrived, I think, at a space where I just knew that this is it. And my seeking stopped. It's unexplainable what that feeling was. And then I went into the space of this inward journey. And yet, as I was embracing this inward journey for myself, it was longing for this external expression, and I had no way to find it. From working in the corporate sector in lifestyle, I moved to a space of taking care of children into daycare for 15 years. And now I moved into a space of what I call self-care. And that's really how I hold the work that we do as coaches, our own self-care and supporting the self-care of others. And when I did this coach training program, I think that's really the story, which is a spiritual-based coaching program. We share that upfront in the way that when we engage with people. It is a spiritual-based coaching program. I experienced that merging of my inner journey and my outer pursuits. I always say that, you know, through my, the grace of my spiritual master, who I fondly call Ma, I was able to understand at least that I'm divine. Through the work that I do, I got an expression to that sense of divinity. And from all the conversations that I've had for the last now 8 years, I notice that leaders are yearning for it. Some of them know it and don't know how to engage with it. Some of them don't know it. And when you speak about it, it's like a breath of fresh air. And they are scared to engage with it. How is it, you know, going to manifest? And I think being in that space of being able to partner with them, hold that space for when they are ready to engage with it, is what I find meaningful. And I really see this whole as, I think that we all dream the same dreams. We all have the same challenges. We call it by different names. But at the end of the day, we're all seeking also the same thing. And it's no difference for leaders or for organizations or at any age or stage. So that's really my take on it. Back to you, Arun Bhai.
Thank you. Thank you, Amrita. And I'll take it next. Thanks for sharing this. Really, really beautiful. I heard echoes of our own journey in this, in what you shared. So I think the spiritual quest, Rohit, was pretty much alive in me as a child, you know, as a young boy growing up in Kashmir, in Srinagar. I think there were always these questions like, what's the end of the universe? Okay, if you reach the end, then if you go after that, what's there? Then who exactly is this person? I'd look at my eyes in a mirror and ask myself, who is this person? What's happening here? What's going on? So I think the spiritual ferment was on. And in my days as a young student of engineering in IIT Delhi, we studied Chinmaya Nanda and, you know, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and did a lot of spiritual shopping, as Amrita put it beautifully, and really searched, you know, shibirs of the Brahma Kumaris and all kinds of things. And then joined the Tata Administrative Service and started getting into organizations and worked in Tata Motors and all that. And I think the question that arose in me was, how can business be centered around the evolution of human beings? How can business be a means for the evolution of people and the evolution of the planet and so on? And a question that haunted me at that time was, is business for life? Or is life for business? And I think the answer was very clear in my mind, that business is supposed to serve life. So then the question was, okay, what next? What next? So after a few years in the Tata Administrative Service, my wife Anu and I decided to shift to Pune. So we came to Pune, traveled in a Maruti 800 car all across from Jamshedpur to Pune with two young daughters and so on, came to Pune and then joined an organization called MAP Consultants. There was a wonderful person called Ashok Khanna there and spent some time with him. And then he passed away within just a few months of joining. And that's when we started Pragati in 1986. So it's more than 34 years now we've been on the path of how can wholeness, spirituality, universal well-being become the central focus of business. And when we started, Rohit and friends, many people told us, when we said love and humanity and compassion 36 years back, people said, you are trying to make snowballs in hell. Business is like a furnace and you guys are setting up a snowball factory. What are you guys? You think you're going to succeed? Pragati leadership, evolution, love, caring, loving. That was 36 years back. But touch wood, by the grace of God, by the hard work of my colleagues at Pragati Leadership, support of Anu and partnership of Anu and all of us. Today, I can say that we have cut a pathway through a jungle, through a forest, where many are now moving. Many are moving on that pathway. So I'm very, very happy to say that. Lastly, I want to say that if you want to catch, say, I love Belgian chocolates. I love them. They melt in the mouth. They're gorgeous. But if I want to catch a fish, I will not put a Belgian chocolate on the hook. No. That would be silly because the fish doesn't want Belgian chocolate. The fish wants a worm. So when I talk to business leaders, we don't talk love, we don't talk spirituality. We said, do you want more engagement? Do you want more innovation? Do you want more integration? They say, yes, yes, yes. Do you want leaders to take responsibility? Do you want them to be energized? They say, yes, yes, yes. And then we say that, okay, mindfulness, spirituality, love is the way. And last thing I want to say is we don't keep that separate in a separate box. No, we don't say spirituality is one box and tools, techniques like open space technology, appreciative inquiry, coaching is separate. No, like Amrita said, we make them into a beautiful and, you know, quoting what Rohit said, we make them into an and. There's no dichotomy. I can be an outstanding coach only when I'm anchored in the sacredness of who I am and I see the sacredness of the other person vividly and clearly. And that guides me on what to do as a coach. It's only as a leader when I'm anchored in love, in wholeness, that I know what to do and how to make results happen that are good for the environment, good for stakeholders, good for everyone, for all stakeholders. So net, net, it works and it works beautifully. Yeah.
Thank you for paving the path, Arun Bhai. It makes our work so much easier. Thank you.
Beautiful. Yogesh, any reflections?
Yeah, I'll be brief here. So you know, I hear what you were referencing, Rohit, in terms of CEO of listed company cannot afford to be agenda-less, etc. So just two or three things very quickly. So one is that it is, I think, abundantly clear that we're trying to change the wheels of a vehicle that is in motion. Right, so we are sitting in that vehicle. We are going from place A to place B, and we're trying to change the wheels while the thing is in motion. Which is, in other words, to say that we cannot afford, in a sense, to be for ideological purity. But we can keep iterating, reiterating. All right, and you keep playing the slot machines in a Vegas casino. I don't know why am I invoking the Vegas casino today? But if you keep playing the slot machines, it is the law of averages dictate that you would hit a small or a big jackpot. And if enough of us keep playing the slot machines, then the person agnostic, like it might not be me, it might be Arun Bhai, it might not be Arun Bhai, it might be Rohit, it might not be Rohit, it might be Amrita, somebody. So if you have enough people iterating, then I think there is that opportunity to kind of ordain a new reality. So for instance, even within the entrenched, deeply entrenched capitalist kind of ways of the world, about 6 months back, 8 months back now, we wanted, in the light of the one of the strictest lockdowns anywhere in the world, which was in India, we felt moved to offer some of our workshops online. We had never done this before in the 10 years of Game Changers. We were not sure if our workshops would translate in a virtual setting because the our offerings in many ways are about transcending content. So they're dependent on intensity, intimacy, eye contact, etc. And when we offered a workshop, the idea was to offer one, see if people would come, if we'd be able to raise, the idea was to pay forward to be able to raise some funds for people, for daily wage workers at the front line. People came in, they liked what they saw, and they did two things. They decided to pay forward and they decided to spread the word forward. One workshop became two, two became five, five became 10, 10 became 50. And that inspired us to change the business model of Game Changers. So now, after the lockdown has gotten over, we do 10 days of facilitation every month. Mm. And this is, we're keeping it as egalitarian as possible. Anybody can come in. And now this is where the iteration comes in. What we're trying to do is we're delineating your investment from your experience. So we live in a world with fixed expenses, right? So the bills need to be paid for, but we're going to say at the same time, I'm going to take one step forward and say, I'm going to leave it to you. You come in, see what you want to, you know, if you're enjoying the experience, then if you feel moved to contribute, then you contribute. Which is, I think, a departure from saying, agar aap itna paisa denge, to aapko ye milega, fir usko aap upgrade kar sakte hain, fir usko supersize kar sakte hain, fir usko aap kuch aur kar sakte hain. Which is like an extractive model of capital, right? So I think the systems of the world dictate that a radical shift, kind of does not have the legs to sustain beyond a point. But if you keep iterating, then a new reality may yet be possible. And it is possible. I think service space is as good an example of that, and everything that service space has done. And, you know, we've heard Nipun Bhai speak about it in so many, many, many ways. So I think it's about that spaciousness. It's about injecting that spaciousness and then say that, okay, if this is what you feel called to do, then that is what you do. And if this is what you feel called to do, then that is what you do. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. And before we move forward, I just wanted to remind to all our listeners that you can share in a comment or a question or a reflection with all of us, either through the comment box of the live stream website or also by an email to ask@servicespace.org. We already have a lot of questions coming in and we'll soon get to them, and you can keep contributing more. Thanks a lot. And you know, on that iteration, Yogesh, and also to a point which Arun, you were raising, that when you go to businesses, you don't talk about spirituality, you talk about building engagement in business and you know, improving the business results. To that, there's a question which I really like and I would like to present here. It was shared by someone in the audience. It is clear that when we are trying to build pathways, we are trying to discover, it will take a lot of experimentation, slowing down and things like that. So is the right, there could be two approaches for this, for leadership, to focus on inner development and accept whatever outer success comes in whatever form as a derivative of it. And the other is to focus on outer success, which typically translates into maximizing shareholder value or stakeholder value, or if you're an NGO, then maximizing impact and things like that, while building a culture of quote unquote conscious engagement, which is aligned with inner development. So both sound similar, but what is put as the primary objective can make a radical difference in the progress which you make. So any reflections on that?
Okay, so may I go first, Rohit?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
I'm changing the sequence that Amrita was saying. Okay. So I think this is a very, very beautiful question. And I go back to what Yogesh said in his opening remarks, which is defining success. How exactly are you defining success? So if you define success in a very limited way, like, for example, making more money, then you are trapping yourself into an understanding of life that will be extremely limiting. I mean, we all know that we can't survive even a few minutes without oxygen. So it's vital, vital, absolutely vital. But what kind of a life would it be if all I did was collecting oxygen cylinders? Why? Because oxygen is vital. Hello. Oxygen is a beautiful means for you to lead a loving life. But what kind of life is it where I'm collecting oxygen cylinders? So in the same way in business, if we define success in a holistic way, where there are different kinds of value, which is there, there's spiritual value, there's emotional value, physical value, intellectual value, learning value, community value, environmental value, clean air value, hundreds of different kinds of value, I think the problem becomes a lot easier. That's one. Now, coming to inner development and outer development, I think one of my favorite quotations is by a German mystic called Meister Eckhart. And what he said is the inner work, the outer work can never be great if the inner work is small. And the outer work can never be small if the inner work is great. So what he's saying, what Meister Eckhart is saying is, that if your inner work is expanded and wholesome and open-hearted, like Amrita's doors and heart, the outer work is bound to expand, is bound to grow. So if you're anchored in love, if you're anchored in no mind, if you're anchored in the peace and wholeness of the heart, and then you work from that space from happiness and not for happiness, the outer work will unfold in the way that life wants it, not the way your ego wants it, not the way your ambition wants it, but the way life wants it. And that is the trust you have to have. And practically what that means is keep looking to the sun of love and keep walking in that direction. The shadows of outer success will follow you. Even if they don't, it doesn't matter. You're focused on the real thing, which is the infinite love of the heart. I'm complete.
Yeah. Can I go?
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I just wanted to share an example to illustrate what we're all saying, actually, in different words. And this is from some work that we did for one of these big five organizing management consultancy consultants or whatever they're called. It was a conversation on, this inner and outer work that I was having with this leader for almost 2 years. And then one day he called me up and he said, will you come and just lead and facilitate our, business strategy meet? And we have this goal and we're planning for the next financial year and we want and whatever. So I said, the work that I do. So how the only way that I can support it is by raising the level of awareness about who they are, what they're here to do and how they're going to contribute. That's all the work that I do. And so he said, yeah, that's exactly what I'd like for us to partner. Because the way that I hold it, and it was the vision of this leader, is that if we're able to get them to anchor in themselves, the numbers will happen and it will just flow. And so we started this work then. And, I go back and do this work with them every year. And the attrition has fallen. The same people, and these people work with the government sector. So I am so hopeful of this world that we all create together, is because each year from a space of self-awareness, it's then moved to a conversation around contribution. Then it's moved to a conversation around compassion. Then it's moved into a conversation around inclusiveness. And each year it's just facilitating these conversations that and in that work in this so-called corporate sector and allow that fragrance to spread far and wide. And they take it back to their homes, to their families, and they come back the next day. We do 2 days with the organization and they come back the next day with their families. And it's such a beautiful space of integration of this, your inner reflecting your outer, or your inner accepting your outer really, and the outer just reflecting your inner. It's such a beautiful dance. Just wanted to share that. Back to you, Yogesh. You're going to say something. Thank you, Arunbhai.
Thank you. I don't know if it was a Freudian slip, Amrita, but you said so-called corporate sector, which gave me pause. So-called corporate sector. Two things really. So one is the hypothesis is that everything outside of love is an adaptive behavior that we form in the absence of love. Okay. Now these adaptive behaviors take many, many forms. Either these adaptive behaviors can take ambition, achievement, substitute. Some are close substitutes, some are cheap substitutes, some are far off substitutes. And really, two of the many, many people out there, but, just having read Elon Musk's autobiography and Steve Jobs' autobiography. And they talk, there are many autobiographies also, but the ones that where they have themselves spoken about their journey. They've spoken at great length about how success, in the way that they defined it, actually damaged them. In Jobs' case, it was really about validation from his parents. So he was an adopted child. He was abandoned by his biological parents. And in Musk's, it was the attention that he did not receive while he was growing up. And you know, some it is easy to couch it in the language of market capitalization and say 50 billion, 60 billion, 100 billion. And then what happens is there's a sense of separation. Ki wo Elon Musk hai, wo Steve Jobs hai, aur ye main hu, ye ya uske andar kuch aur daud raha hai, mere andar kuch aur daud raha hai. But the point is, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. All right? And to that end, to be just able to see that, like Arun Bhai said, love is all we need, but a little Belgian chocolate doesn't hurt. But the point is, if you keep the Belgian chocolate as the main thing, then getting to love. So, you know, you can go from knowing to knowledge. But knowledge to knowing is a far more arduous journey, because knowledge gives you the illusion of control. Again, to kind of go back to the same thing. And it stops you from living. It stops you from having skin in the game. But when you begin with love, so this is again to say that, you know, when you institutionalize, when you have your lived experience, then you're in touch with the earth, then you're in touch with the soil. And then, of course, you're free to pursue what you want to pursue. But the other way around, like after $35 billion in the bank and people telling you only what you want to hear, calling your own bluff is a lot more difficult, which is what happened with Jobs and which is what happened with Musk, let alone us lesser mortals. So yeah, that's the hypothesis. And I don't know how scientific the hypothesis is, that, you know, all we need is love. And when love is not absent, or when I'm not able to receive love, I develop a range of adaptive behaviors which can take me as close to love as possible. And some days they do, and then some days they don't. But eventually, all roads lead to that same home.
Beautiful. Thank you, Yogesh. And one of the questions which I want to ask now, all of you, is that I was going through some research recently, and it said that the statement that power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And there is while it may not be like universally as simply true, but there's a lot of convincing evidence that actually, in a way, power desensitizes us to others' needs. As a leader, I think one of the main qualities people look for in a leader is that the leader should be sensitive to your needs, should be able to understand what you want and wholesomely serve that. But there's research that as you get more power, you start becoming desensitive. It's not that you become a bad person, but it is just how our brains are operating. So any examples or insights on how do we balance this very inherent conflict that as we accumulate more, as we come into more power, how do we not lose the empathy and connection?
Can I go?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So just as I was hearing you, Rohit, the first thing that kind of appeared in consciousness is that there's only one thing, and we kind of present this in the work that we do, that there's only one thing that you cannot have as a leader increasingly. And this is a departure from, you know, the zeitgeist, which was present even 5 or 10 years back. Today, the only thing you cannot have as a leader is answers. So as against 5 or 10 years back, and today it continues to be the culture in a lot of organizations, that as a leader, you are supposed to be the smartest person in the room. You're supposed to be the cleverest person in the room. You're supposed to be the sort of the one who has all the answers. And yet what we are seeing is that when you have the answer, and when that answer is presenced as a, you know, when you as a leader presents that answer, it blunts the intelligence in the room. Right? Which is to say that, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, that if you want your team to build a world-class ocean liner or a world-class ship, you can either tell them the what and the how, and tell them this is where you need to source it from, these are the greatest building technique, these are the best practices, etc., 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 etc. You can do that, and that's one way of leading people. Or you can simply invest in getting them to love the sea. And if they love the sea enough, and if they have the desire now to go and wade into the great seas, then they will automatically to do what they want to do. Then the ship only becomes a means, and because you've got to have, if you have to go to the middle of the ocean, it is then by default, then the ship doesn't become an end to itself. It is, you know, you want to go to the middle of the ocean. So yeah, so just like two things that appeared when I heard you say that. So thank you.
Beautiful. It reminds me of this quote that today we need leaders who are not heroes but hosts for the goodness to spring. Thank you. Arun, Amrita?
Okay, so I think just taking off on that quote, you know, the earlier view of leadership has been the hero or heroine, command and control. I'm going to galvanize the people. I'll mobilize people. I'll make things happen. And I think for years, we have kind of got stuck in that mental image of a leader as a commander, a controller, a maker of things, a maker and a shaker, and the picture is on the magazine, business magazine, and so on. But given the kind of environment we are in, and given the needs of the world at this point, whether it's business or society or something, we need leaders who are really like just spaces, people who are hosts, who can catalyze the collective intelligence of people, who can see that everyone has a part to play, see that everyone is giving their gifts and creating community. And those kind of leaders are very, very different from the command and control leaders. Now, the command and control leaders are the ones who will have power corrupts, and power corrupts absolutely, because then they try and go for more and more outer power. But the host leader is dissolving more and more into the beautiful wonder that is life, is dancing hand in hand in life, is guided by inner intuition, and never says, I did it. If you ask them, did you do it? Said, are you kidding me? Thousands and thousands of people. I mean, if I ask Nipun Bhai Mehta, did you do service space? Honestly, he will say, what are you talking about? There are 55,000 volunteers who are doing it. Not me. Rohit is doing it. Aditi is, millions of people are doing it. So I think this is the shift needed. Now, in this shift, there are three points I want to make as to what that involves. Number one, it involves working from no mind, no eye. So such leaders have to meditate and dissolve their eye in the ocean of love and compassion. So that's the first thing. Number two, hold a humongous vision. Don't be scared. It's not your vision. It's life's vision. Hold that vision and say, this is life's vision, and put it out there. And if someone says, how are you going to do it? You say, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to do it, because I'm not doing it. I'm not there. And then you say, well, the answer to how is yes. You say yes to the vision. You say yes to your dream, and the universe will make it happen. And the third thing, my favorite metaphor, is as a leader, do not belong to hearts or spades or to clubs or anything. Be like the Joker. Now this card, you say, are you clubs? No, I'm not clubs. Are you an ace? No, I'm not an ace. Are you one? No, I'm nothing. I'm nothing. But if I say Joker, can you be a two of hearts for me? Sure. Can you be an ace of spades for me? Sure. So the great leader of wholeness, wholesome leaders who are leading from love and leading from that silence and emptiness of the heart, are ever flexible, ever open to life. They say yes to life, and they do what has to be done in the moment from a space of deep love and compassion. Amrita.
Thank you. I love that you present the Joker. And that's for me, as much as I feel anchored in this sense of love and spirituality, and that's really my litmus test when I engage, that is that whatever, however the other person holds that space of spirituality, is there that sense of grounding in that sense of spirituality? And the second, seemingly apparently opposite to it, but to me is just the flip side of the coin, is masti and joy and fun and bringing those two together is really what makes life so wonderful and this whole beautiful celebration, right? And I'm just reminded of this, of when I started work, when I finished my MBA and I got this job, in this whole government sector, in the government bank. And like my parents and all said, wow, government job mil gaya to bas set. Like it's like life is superb and life is like completely for you. Everything is going well for you. And I felt a sense of disillusionment and I left because I felt that, wow, I've done so well. I want to make this contribution. The need to make this contribution was high. And then I moved into the space of working in this corporate sector again. And I say corporate sector is just the way that it's held. No Freudian slips. It's just the way that we look at it as separate, but it's so much part of us and integrated within us, right? And so I joined this corporate sector, became this high flyer, high potential. And I developed this sense of arrogance that life is happening as I'm making it happen. And then moving into that, and without me, nothing can happen, that sense. And then this, when I embraced the sense of spirituality or this inward journey, and this whole aspect of being this instrument through which his music flows is how I have moved through these areas of my life. I know that there is this space in which all of us exist and there's no difference. And, it's life is just happening as each one of us. It's that space of allowance that Yogesh spoke about when we opened and just letting it just happen. It's like, I'm just reveling in that masti and enjoying it. It's so simple. It's really so simple. And I don't have words to express the simplicity of it really, but that's really how I experience it.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Beautiful. There's so much richness in what all of you have shared, and we could just go on and on further exploring these questions. But we'll move to the audience questions. We'll take a few questions from the audience, and thank you all for sharing a very insightful question. Before I do that, I just want to present something. I don't think we have enough time for to go into it, but I think we, as a society, we are also sort of, we expect so much from our leaders. So one thing which has stood out for me is not to sort of give them a leaders also a break, give them also a space of going through this journey of exploring, because it's so easy to for all of us to fall in that trap where we are followers, where we are being led in some systems, that to keep expecting perfection from our leaders, and to that extent, I think we end up creating a lot of isolation and segregation for them. So thank you all for showing up and in that way of creating a space of acceptance for the leaders. Thank you. And with that, I will step on to some of the audience questions. And, so there's a question by Prapti and there's a question by Clitus, which I find similar. Prapti is asking that, Amrita spoke about choosing love over fear. How can we really start taking small steps or big steps in that journey? And even Clitus is asking that for me, I see that the love is real, but in this world today, there's so much hatred, there's so much fear that how can I really start embodying love a little bit more despite seeing what all is happening? So to me, this is a question of some practices, some interventions, which you in your own experience or your very, very rich experience of working with others, if some practices which you could recommend.
Sure. So let me start by saying that it's a lovely question, beautiful question. And the simple answer to it is take time to be still. Take time to be still and just listen to whatever is happening inside you, outside you. Just be like the sky which watches the clouds go by, listen to the sounds, just take time to be in the moment. Now, you don't necessarily have to make this 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or 50 minutes, even tiny pauses of 1 or 2 minutes, several times a day, develop your muscle of presence and mindfulness. So that is one. The second thing is, in the world where you have fear and love and all kinds of things happen, keep your face turned towards the light of love inward and focus on the good things happening in the world. And when you're facing the sun, you will not see the shadows. The shadows are behind you. So keep walking with your face turned towards the sun. Now, I'm not saying be blind to all the evil in the world, but keep steadily focusing on the good that is present in you, in others, which is like the sun behind the clouds, which is like the presence of the divine sacred in each moment. Keep tuned to that. Silences help you to remember that.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that imagery of the sun. It is hugely powerful. And my response to that really is, in addition to what Arun Bhai said of cultivating that space of stillness, I think cultivating the muscle of trust is also an integral personal practice, and comes from the space of trusting myself and trusting in the goodness that exists within me and all around me, and shining the light on that. Because fear is like, it's just that, because you're stepping into an unknown space, that's why you fear it, right? But if you trust that there is an energy within you and all around you that will carry you through that unknown, it just makes it so much more adventurous, the journey of to the unknown. And you're just know that you're like enveloped. You will be guided, guaranteed. You will be protected. And there's no two ways about it. And it comes from building that trust in yourself and trust in others. And don't doubt, you know, small things. You know, when you go to buy vegetables and that bhajiwala will tell you a price, trust that he's giving you the right price. Don't haggle with him and say, nah, it could have been this much. Just doubt anything. Just trust in the goodness of others, and it will just begin to flow. That's how I see it.
Yogesh, anything from your end?
I'll take off from, you know, we've referenced crystal shopping. I think Amrita mentioned one, and Arun Bhai also referenced it one. The phrase of choice I'd like to employ here is spiritual bypassing. And which is to say that, you know, when I heard the question, you know, with everything that is happening in the world, how do you anchor yourself in a space of love? I think if you allow yourself to grieve about what is, and if you're not in resistance of what is, and if that means you collapse, then you collapse. Right? The thing is, it's not only a phoenix that rises from the ashes. Everything that collapses rises from the ashes. It is the nature of the beast. Right? And I think just, in other words, reclaiming your humanity. You know, we kind of have these sometimes a concrete wall, sometimes a piece of wood which nothing can penetrate, nothing can reach you. You intellectualize grief, and that is spiritual bypassing. So to that end, you know, we need to feel what we need to feel to heal, and we need to heal what we need to heal to feel. So yeah.
Beautiful, quite remarkable. And I want to present one question from Sanjeev. We don't have a lot of time, but any quick comments, even from one of you or two of you, before we move to some final closing comments, is he's asking that we as leaders often tend to get just very focused on our primary group whom we are serving, right? For example, it could be in corporates, it is shareholders. That how do we diversify first, not only to include shareholders, but then to include stakeholders, all the stakeholders. And then, you know, to further, I think, capture that spirit, I would like to add that not only stakeholders, but today the world we live in is phenomenally more interconnected, very visibly. I think it was always interconnected invisibly, but it is even the more visible today with, for example, the pandemic like coronavirus. So how do we as leaders start seeing that even not in the polarity of this is my inner circle whom I have to take care of, and this is something outside where, you know, I am not responsible. So how do we move away from a zero-sum game as a leader, but something which is more perhaps sarvodaya, which is like which is good for all? How do we engage in that way as leaders, and how do we step away from polarities?
Can I offer a very quick reflection?
Yes, please.
So Raman Maharishi has said this amongst many, many other people, but Raman Maharishi is known to have said that two things. One is that there are no others, right? A. And B, the only, and I'm using this word for lack of a better phrase that I have access to in this moment, the only sin is forgetting. Which is to say that if something is appearing as a zero-sum game, you don't have to change it. You have to stop seeing it as a zero-sum game. Because it's not there, right? Whether you're conflating, we are conflating perception for projection. You see a zero-sum game when you project a zero-sum game. But if you perceive, then there is no zero-sum game. And it has got nothing to do, like, you know, Arun Bhai has been talking about the no mind and the no I. If you take the self out of the equation, then there's no zero sum game. Abhi tum apne upar leke rakhoge to haan bhai mere saath, so then yeah, sure, in the limited sense of the I, you may seem that there's a zero sum game. But even right now, what is getting created is no one is neutralized what the other person is saying. Everyone is choicelessly adding to what the other is saying. So to see that the zero sum game is a lie, I think that's all.
Thank you, Yogesh. I'd just like to build on what you're saying. The only time we have or will ever have is now. That's all we'll have. We'll never have anything else. And in this now, the thing to do is to be compassionate to the person in front of me, to do it now, and to see that this is my opportunity to give love and to trust life, as Amrita is saying, when people will come in front of you in this now who need your love, who need your compassion, will serve them, right? And don't be worried about some, is it out, in, whatever, because the moment is all you have, and this moment here and now is all you have. Can I be loving in this? Can I be caring and respectful to the person in front of me, including animals? And can I do it now, not postpone? Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. With that, I would invite you all for any closing comments or any question also perhaps which you have been holding in your lives regarding leadership and love. So any closing comments or question, and then we'll close the call.
Let me begin the circle of closing again.
Right. Perfect.
So on this really auspicious day of Dashera, I'd really, you know, thank all of you who have created the space and that we've created together. For me, I've experienced the essence of both leadership and love in this virtual space that we've created together. And thank you for that. I just like to end with a real prayer from my heart to your heart. And that is for each and every, my prayer is that each and every one of you tread the path of discovering and finding what we call generically your spiritual calling, your spiritual path. I would say that's the only path, really. Find you will find when you start looking. It could be in the form of a song, a book, a spiritual master, whatever supports you to access and reconnect with that sense of divinity that exists within you. And once you find it, hold on to it, enjoy it, celebrate it, and allow that to, you know, manifest in this world, this beautiful world, in this really short time that we inhabit.
Yes.
We live in this really short time. It's so short in comparison. So just live it. And if at any point in time you forget how absolutely divine you are, just get in touch with me and I will remind you. Thank you.
Super, super, super beautiful. So Amrita, that is so lovely. And thank you for that lovely reminder. I think I'll just build on it. I think the key is to remember that you are divine, you're sacred, you're infinite and nothing at the same time. You're both infinite. That is that infinity and the zero is nothing. And so you're this mysterious wholeness and nothingness at the same time. Remember that through regular meditation, regularly going inside, and let that love, that infinite peace and silence that you are, let it guide you on what you have to do next. And keep asking the question, what would love do now? What would love do now? What would joy do now? And take these baby steps. And don't worry about legacies and things. Take these baby steps of love, 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 and the legacy will happen behind you, whatever has to happen. So all good wishes to everyone. Enjoy, be simple, keep loving people, and give life the best you have. Thank you. Yeah.
Yogesh.
Sure. Thank you, Rohit. Thank you, Arun Bhai. Thank you, Amrita. Thank you, Aditi. A reminder that I find useful, that I find empowering, is just knowing that nothing I do or not do can make me more or less worthy of love. You know. In other words, everybody from the priest to the pedophile deserves the same amount of love. The fact that the priest is sometimes the pedophile notwithstanding. So the fact that we are here on this planet means that we are worthy of love. It's just a reminder that I have for myself. That's one. And I think second thing is that, you know, just knowing that the odds, for example, the odds of a sperm and an egg. And maybe we can, I don't know, I can play a little game for 5 seconds with you. What do you think are the odds of a sperm and an egg manifesting in human form? Arun Bhai, Rohit, Amrita, can I quickly just have a number from you? What are the odds of a sperm and an egg manifesting in human form?
One in a few trillion, perhaps?
One in a few trillion, okay. Amrita?
I have no idea. I just celebrate every time it manifests. That's it.
Okay. So from 3.5 trillion, she's like, Joe, are I watch? Okay. Rohit?
Yeah, one in a few billion.
Yeah, it's one in 3.4 billion. The population of the world is 7 billion. So, which is to say that nothing that we do in this life will need us to beat those odds. Not building a colony on Mars, not building a vaccine for COVID. You know, the fact that we are here means that you've won the lottery already.
Mm.
You know, go forth and be the force of nature that you already are. And the only thing that can happen to you is that you can forget. So, you know, there's nothing to create. There's nothing. The only thing that can happen is you forget. And when you forget, may you have yourself to remind yourself, or you may have a community that reminds you that you are that force of nature causes. So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you, everyone. I am really delighted and grateful for this conversation that one in a 3.2 billion we four and many behind the scenes volunteers manifested, so three of you and many behind the scenes, which made this coming together possible. All the manifestations through our audience and their wonderful questions for coming together and building on this inquiry. We could not take some of those questions, but we promise to continue the dialogue through other online channels and come back to you and continue this conversation. Really grateful for all of you from reminding from your own lives and through your words, the choice which we have in every moment to see beyond the clouds and see the sun beyond, and to make snowballs in hell, and to and to make let our life be an expression of not doing things for love but from love, and holding each other in this small steps or big steps, holding ourselves and each other in that process. Thank you all for showing up. We will close the call with a minute of silence in gratitude for the numerous conditions which allow us to be together in this space and time. Thank you so much. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. What a wonderful morning.
Yes.
Thank you.
Lovely morning. Good.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.